The next topic, Elizabethan sonnet. Introduction. Like many other literary genres, the sonnet in England was imported from abroad. It most probably originated in Italy with Dante, who wrote a number of sonnets to his developed named Beatrice. Beatrice. Right. But the flowering of the sonnet come with Petrarch, 1304-74, a generation later. It was Yeatt who introduced the sonnet in England. Though he wrote much earlier, it was in 1557, before Elizabeth was coronated, and some 15 years after his death, that this his sonnet were published in Total and Miscellany. Wyatt and Leeds was accepted by Surrey, whose sonnet were likewise published after his death in the Miscellany. Yeatt was much under the spell of his model Petrarch, and out of his 32 sonnet, 17 are but adaptation of Petrarch. Moreover, most of them follows the Petrarchian pattern, that each has two part and octave, 8 lines, and followed by a sestet, 6 line. In between the octave and the sestet, there is a marked pause indicated on paper by some blank space. With the ninth line come the volta of or the turn of thought. The thought in the Petrarchan sonnet by may be compared to a wave which goes on rising and reaches its highest altitude with the eighth line, and then start petering out till it dies at the end. The octave in the Petrarchan sonnet always has the rhyme scheme A B B A A B B A, though the sestet may have one of the various pattern, such as C D C D C D or C D D C E E. Whereas Yeatt mostly adhered to the Petrarchan pattern, Surrey invented a new one for his sonnet, which latter was to be adopted by most Elizabethan sonneteers, the most prominent of whom was Shakespeare. This pattern came to be termed the Shakespearean pattern. The feature of the Surrey skew pattern is the division of the 14 line into 4 units, 3 quatrains, 4 line, and the ending per couplet, 2 lines. The rhyme scheme followed is AB, 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 CC. Both Wyatt and Surrey imitated in their sonnet the conventional thought of Petrarch, which rendered them somewhat artificial and insincere. Surrey's sonnet have a tenderness and grace, occasional lyrical melody, and genuine looking sentiments which are absent from Yeatt, and moreover he is easily the better craftsman of the two. However, Yeatt also display now and then the some masculine vigor and disarming simplicity of characteristic of him. All told, his sonnet are however much the plumizer Thomas Watson. For many years after the publication of Total Miscellany, the sonnet seems to have failed to attract the attention of poet. It was only in 1519 that the voice of sonnet got itself established in England, so much so that not even one man of any poetic pretensions could do without the production of a sonnet sequence addressed to his mistress, real or imaginary. And as Donne put it, many of them had no mistress but their muse. After total, the name of the sonnet came also be applied to some other type of short lyric, which were not necessarily 14 lines liners. It was left for Marlowe's friend Thomas Watson, 1557-92, to recall first the attention of the reader to the sonnet after Yeatt and Surrey. His Hectophantia was published in 1582, At the time when Sidney was composing his own sequence entitled Astrophel and Satella, which was later published in 1591, it is with Sidney's work that the popular weather of sonnet began. The virtue remained in full swing till the end of the 16th century. How many thousand sonnets were written between 1591 and 16th century? Anybody guess from about 2000 or extant even today? The most prominent among the followers of Sidney were Spenser and Shakespeare. In those years of fresh sonneteers, impulse came from France. Yeat and Surrey had looked toward Petrarch, but with Elizabethan sonneteer, the Petrarchan influence had since had down and street. They draw inspiration from the work of the French sonneteer such as Ronsard 1522 to 85, Du Bellay 1525 to 60, and Disports 1546 to 166, who appear to them as more modern and effective than Petrarch. Sidney 1554 to 86, most important work was in his sonnet sequence Astrophel and Satella, which appeared in 1591. It comprised 108 sonnets and 11 songs. In it, Sidney told the story of his unrequited love for Penelope, just as Petrarch in his own sonnet had told the story of his successful love affair with Laura. Penelope in Satella, a star, the Sidney himself, Astrophel, a star, lover. Penelope Devereux had begun engaged to Sidney even she was about 14, but was later married off by her father to one Lord Pitch in 1581. His upset Sidney quite considerably, and he poured out the agony of his despair into the mold of the sonnet. 2 years afterward, however, he got married to France Walsingham, and with Mary's his sonneteering passion understandably enough vanished, but for those two interim years he remained busy in putting his feeling into the 108 sonnets which has Astrophel and Satella were published posthumously in 1591. Sidney's sentiments in his sonnet sequence are partly real and partly conventional. Some critics have emphasized their genuine nature. For instance, G.S. Mayer asserts that Sidney's sonnets mark an epoch, as they are the first direct expression in English literature of an intimate and personal experience struck off in the white heat of passion. They never lost the one merit above altogether of lyric poetry, the merit of sincerity. Another critic ever that Sidney writes not because it is a pleasant and accomplished thing to do, but because he must. His sonnets lit about blood, however artificial some of them may seem, it is certain that at least their groundwork was provided by genuine autobiographical experience. In the very first sonnet of the series, Sidney describes how, while writing, he looked in the beginning to other poets for inspiration, and how he read book after book so that he might write well. But words came halting forth, beating my torn pen, beating myself for spite. Fool, said my muse to me, look in thy heart and write. However, we cannot say that Sidney always looked in his heart before writing, for there are obvious instances where he seems to be writing after the conventional Petrarchan and the Ronsardian formula. There are his traditional strophes, to sleep, to night, to the moon, and to even to his mistress' dog. And then there is the same medley of theoretical, rhetorical conceit, C-O-N-C-E-I-T-S, and formalized and sugared expression after the Petrarchan manner as well as extravagant and patently. Counterfeit imagery. Even so, in the description of feeling and some sentiments, there is often a vividness with minuteness which superbly impresses upon the reader their genuineness. To Lamb, also Sidney feeling did not appear as imaginary and unreal, for he called them, in his oft-quoted words, full, metrical, and circumstantiated. Even when Sidney follows a set tradition, he is often surprisingly realistic. Consider, for instance, his astrophe to the moon. He addressed the moon as the moon, which no contemporary poet would have done, for in the poetry the moon had to be addressed as Cynthia or Diana. Formula considered, Sidney's sonnets are different from both the Shakespearean and the Petrarchan kind. It does not always adhere to the same pattern. In the most of these sonnets, the rhyme scheme is A B B A A B B A C D C D E E. But in a few, it is A B A B instead of the Petrarchan A B B A. However, their one constant feature is that they end on a couplet, as Shakespearean sonnet do. Minor sonneteers. Sidney's works opened the floodgates and sonneteering in England. We hardly meet with a poet of the 1590s who did not try his hand at his popular genre, and who took risk before producing sonnet sequence addressing to a mistress, real or imaginary. The first two follows was Samuel Daniel with his Delia, 1592, dedicated to Lady Pembroke. His verses are quite smooth, though the rhyme are sometimes bad. He always used the Shakespearean pattern. Daniel's worst fault is his prolixity. He himself closes his last sonnet with the very telltale line, "I say no more, I fear, I said too much." Henry Constable, Sir Diana, followed closely in 1592. He is only occasionally graceful, for what he writes is often marred by fantastic conceit. In 1593 followed Watson's Tears of Fancy, which is cold, though its display much technical skill. Parthenophil and Parthenop by Burness, Lycia by Jealous Fletcher, and Phyllis by Thomas Laws were some other sonnet sequence published in his period. These works are good, and some of them even excellent in pitch. Of these sonneteers, Fletcher is the smoothest and the most intelligible. Burness is forceful and occupies in copious but harsh and indiscreet in his diction. In 1594 followed William Percy Coelia, written after Burness but without his vigor. An anonymous sequence, Zephyria, followed, but Drayton's idea was vastly superior to it. Drayton was quite smooth and interesting, but he failed to exhibit the depth and the sincerity of Sidney. In 1595 appeared Spencer Amoretti and Chapman's Metaphysical Sequence, a coronet for his mistress, Philosophy. Shakespeare had also perhaps written his sonnets in and about 1595, though they saw publication only after a number of years. In 1596 and 97 appeared some collection of young men who wrote after the fashion of the time. Among them may be mentioned Bartholomew Graffins, Fedesa, Richard Lynch and Diella, and William Smith Clorices. Spencer's we know purpose to discuss the work of Spencer and Shakespeare, who with Sidney are the most important sonneteer of the Elizabethan age. So Spencer Emeriti 1595 is a collection of 88 sonnets in which he narrates the story of his wooing of Elizabeth well. His initial frustration and his final success, culminating in their marriage, which is exquisitely celebrated in his wedding hymn, Epithalamion and the Epithalamion. The Emeriti sonnets show a consistent level of craftsmanship, though the profound and stirring intensity of Drayton sends there no help. Come, let us kiss and part, and Sidney, leave me, O love, which richest but to dust, is absent from them. However, the sonnets were quite autobiographical in nature and based more or less on the actual experience of the poet. The element of conventions is, however, also quite obvious. Many of the lovers, Spencer's, sigh, are the Petrarchan brand, and the proud and the disdainful attitude of the crucial mistress is a pretty traditional feature. And then there are the traditional conceit and the extravagance of imagery so dear even to Sidney. Nevertheless, the Emeriti sonnets constitute the only major works of Spencer in which he gives utterance to his personal sentiments. Without having a resource to the dark conceit allegory, with respect to the content, Spencer's sonnet sequence can be divided into two unequal parts. First, sonnets 1 to 62 deal with the unrequited love for the poet who, singing like a furnace, write mostly in the traditional manner. Second, sonnets 63 to 84 deal with the lover's happiness, and the maidenly bashfulness of the mistress is gone, surrendered herself happily. Happily to ardent lover. In number 64, he records the first kiss, and in No. 67, describe himself as a hunter who, after a toilsome pursuit, has succeeded in securing his quarry, which is, of course, the mistress herself, who, at the approach of the hunter, sought not to fly, but fearless still did bait, till eye in hand her at, and half trembling took, and with her own good will her firmly tied. A strange thing me seemed to see a beast so wild, so goodly worn, with her own will beguiled. The usual, though not invariable, rhyme scheme of Spencer's sonnet is ABAB, BCBC, CDCD, EE, which came to be known later as Spencerian pattern. It will be seen that the three quatrains are very deftly interlinked. Throw rhyme, the last rhyme of the first quatrain is used in the first line of the second, and the last rhyme of the second quatrain is likewise used in the first line of the third. The result is a complicated rhyme pattern with a harmonious orchestral effect, with its so characteristic of Spencer's poetry, an acuite metrical artist as he is. Shakespeare's sonnet have proved an attractive bone for this generation after generation of critics to gnaw at. These sonnets, some 154 in number, were first published in body in 1609, though there is clear evidence that they were in circulation as early as 1598, and were written most probably in 1595-96. The first 126 sonnets are addressed to a young and handsome man who has been variously interpreted as the Earl of Southampton and William Herbert, Earl of Pembroke. The next 26 sonnets to address at a dark and wanton lady who betrayed the poet for the young man. Albert C. Voss, in A Literary History of England, observed, of all Elizabethan sonnets, sequence to Shakespeare's is the least typical. It celebrates not the idealized love of an idealized mistress, but the affection of an older man for a gilded and wayward youth. In his sonnet, Shakespeare frequently bewails his anguish and misfortunes. He feels to be an outcast. The young patron starts liking a rival poet, and the poet's mistress deserts him for a young man. In expressing his anguish, Shakespeare lends his verse a rare glow of lyrical melody and meditative energy, with a strike one as coming from a heart with real feels. What it articulates, Shakespeare is very exceptionally impersonal in his dramatic works, but in the sonnet, he, to use the word of Wordsworth, unlocked his art. There seems to be more and genuineness and less of convention in his sonnets. Even then, we cannot accept Wordsworth's sweeping statement. Some of the sonnets are, to quote Albert C. Voss in noted comma, obstinately private and elusive, and some are conceit exercise in reaching old conclusion by new ways. But the happiest of them reach of old conclusion through series of metaphors and comparable suggestive power. The style is largely free from ingenuities of the real early plays and from the dense figurativeness of the latter. In order to come close, in spite of the agonized tone and the rather lugubrious atmosphere of the sonnet, they end on an optimistic note, for there is the triumphant and affirmation of the transcendence of love, the poet's love for his patron. Thus, even in the sonnet, as elsewhere, we are conceived the Shakespeare instant sanitary of outlook. Formally, Shakespeare's sonnet followed the rhyme scheme AB, AB, CD, CD, EF, EF, ZZ, which was first used by Surrey and which was the most popular among Elizabethan sonneteers. One characteristic of Shakespeare's sonnet is that the final couplet, for from coming as the crescendo, comes with the feebleness of almost an afterthought or a parenthetic remark, generally affirming his love for the young man. The poet, Elizabethan sonnet, over.